Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So last week, we talked a little bit about the executive order that Trump signed. Remember when Republicans were against executive orders? Remember that? Yes. Yeah, back when they were, when it was just they were beating up at the black guy in the White House. Remember that? Yeah, those days. Evidently, no such problem now, especially if you're going to use those executive orders to attack working people and attack government. So, great. Two of their favorite things, attacking our government and attacking the people who work for it. This time, President Trump has this move towards making a large segment of our federal workforce at-will employees that can be fired anytime he wants, harkening us back to the good old days of patronage, when we could have loyal employees, loyal to someone like Trump, who are going to make things up and tell him what he wants to hear. I personally think it's a bad idea, and here to share some thoughts on the executive order and the fact that they're suing the administration. I've asked Richard Loeb to come talk with us. Richard is a senior policy counsel for the American Federation of Government Employees, AFGE. Richard, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you so much, Rick.
So this executive order, real quiet. There wasn't a lot of news about this. Wasn't a big signing ceremony in the Rose Garden that I remember. But this is a pretty bad one.
Well, it was done last Wednesday night at around 8 o'clock. So they were surely not trying to bring a lot of public attention to it. Done after hours, you might say. And
literally like thieves in the night.
Pretty close to that, yes.
So walk me through what it is.
Well, it's really a stunning executive order. It basically takes a portion of the career federal civil service. These are working people. These are not the highest levels of the civil service, but they're what you would call middle management for the most part positions. And these are people in many cases who've been with the government for many years. And it basically says, guess what? You used to have a position with due process protections, and you were rated on the quality of your work, and you could be disciplined, even fired, if your work was not up to speed. Well, guess what? You are now effectively a political appointee, and you can be fired at will by whoever your boss is, and there's nothing you can do about it. And these are people who have already been in these positions in most cases, in fact, in all cases covered by the executive order, for some period of time. And, people are asking us, how many people are we talking about? Well, just to give you some context, the total number of political appointees in the executive branch, about 4,000 people, give or take, out of a total executive branch employment of about 2 million people.
Right.
This will probably turn tens of thousands, in fact, we estimate potentially 100,000 plus positions into political appointments.
Wow. So this could really take us back to the good old days of patronage, where you give some free work to the campaign and you got a job until they get thrown out, and then you have these ideological swings. This ain't good for this. This is the way you run a lemonade stand. This just ain't it.
Well, everybody's focused right now on the provisions about removing people. Well, of course, as you just pointed out, the same provisions on removal also say they can hire whomever they want. There's no requirement for any kind of competition, no open postings of these jobs, just whoever you want to hire, you can hire. They'd have to meet some minimal qualifications. But it's basically, as I told the New York Times, it's basically takes us back to 19th century patronage, and it is essentially a declaration of war on the career civil service. And it's, these are ideas that were discarded about 140 years ago. And, no democratic state, and I mean country, has a career civil service, professional civil service, that's based upon this type of level of patronage. It's pretty much in line with keeping in line with what Trump's general and his administration's general views on bringing expertise to bear on problems.
Yeah. And the thing that gets me is, you know, as I'm reading through this, I'm thinking about, you know, who these people are. These are the folks who have taken government jobs that are paying probably far below what they could get in the private sector. But they're doing it because, one, public service is important. Two, there's some stability. And three, ultimately, I think, you know, it comes down to, you know, service to, you know, to the future. If we do away with these people, if we gut this kind of institutional knowledge, especially in a time of pandemic, when you're talking about adding scientists and you know, doctors to this list, we're kind of in a really screwed position. And Joe Biden would most certainly be in a tough spot if elected January 20th, with all of the other crisis going on. If Trump did go through and have a mass slaughter of, you know, just kicking people out of our government.
Well, I mean, you pointed out nicely. So the way the executive order is currently structured, it goes after positions in what's called the competitive service, which is about 70% of all the jobs in the executive branch. These include positions at agencies such as EPA, Interior, you know, the environmental agencies, Department of Labor, HUD, all of the Department of Defense, and many, many other agencies. You know, you've obviously read about the disputes he's had with, or his appointees have had, with the career staff at EPA and Interior and so forth, just ignoring scientific advice or, you know, ignoring even the existence of the basic scientific principles. So, yeah, these were the people who were most likely be affected by the executive order and by the ability to just uproot these people and place them essentially into political appointments and be removed at will. And, of course, you know, as I said a moment ago, you know, you might, instead of having career people with many years of experience typically in these jobs with, you know, pretty good qualifications, you could easily find yourself with people who come from oil companies or from the companies that, you know, obviously are regulated or not very happy with many of the policies, including the basic underlying statutes, which they can't necessarily get repealed, but the regulation writing to undermine a lot of the statutory basis for the policies that we enjoy that relate to things like clean air and clean water. And you can just keep filling out in the blanks. This would affect the Department of Agriculture tremendously. It it may at some point be expanded to include some of the types of positions that you're mentioning. Right now, most of the medical positions are not covered because they're not in the competitive service. So that's sort of a anomaly that may be somewhat helpful. But I'm sure there are clever minds thinking, you know, how do we get those positions possibly subject to these types of, you know, at-will type employment.
Right. But, you know, here's the thing. I think of, you know, a former coal mine owner leading the MSHA department to oversee the mines, going even further to where, you know, all of the inspectors are former mine foremen and all of the people doing research on the effects of, you know, coal on miners and safe conditions all being, you know, corporate shills. I kind of have a problem with that, you know, and I guess you can go through agency after agency where you see, you know, obviously it's headed up by, you know, someone who ideologically is opposed to the work that they do, and then filling it with underlings who are as equally ideologically opposed to the operation, horribly destructive and dangerous for us.
Well, I mean, that's what.
Or have I gone too far? Am I being too hyperbolic?
No, you haven't gone too far. That's what makes this executive order interesting. So it creates this new schedule of positions. The positions have not yet been defined. Each agency is supposed to have their initial list laid into the Office of Personnel Management, which is the government civil service agency, by a deadline of January 19th. I've pointed out to people, hey, you know, there's nothing that says they can't do it faster than that. It just says they should be in no later than January 19th, at least not the initial list. But the criteria they're using, this is the criteria. So these positions that they're looking at reviewing, that's why I say it could be tens of thousands and even really it could even be hundreds of thousands. I don't know if they have enough time to convert all of them, but they include positions whose work relates to agency policies. That's the actual quote, policies, including regulations and guidance, or where the employee exercises discretion. So I don't even know what that means.
Right.
It's so broad.
It's like everybody except the guy sweeping the floor.
That. I'm sorry?
So basically everybody who's not – everybody except the guy who sweeps the floor.
Yeah, well, actually, I'm not sure it would depend because it says – I don't want to get into all the details, but in some cases, employees who merely view or circulate agency policies to others could be covered. So that's clearly going after, you know, so clerical staff in some cases. Right. I assume it would be clerical staff whom they don't like.
So basically, we're moving, and this is for my union brothers and sisters who think Donald Trump is their friend. And I've got a lot of union listeners who think, you know, Donald Trump's doing great stuff for the union. Never mind what happened with Janus. Never mind all the NLRB decisions that have just been disastrous and horrible. Never mind the Walmart attorney who's the head of who's the Secretary of Labor. Never mind all of that. Forget all of that. You're basically making the entire federal workforce an at-will employment situation, which eventually then I got to assume is going to filter down to even the few unionized workers that are left in this country. So basically you're talking about the ultimate cancel culture right in front of us.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because just to stick it to us in the end, they have a provision towards the very end of the executive order that essentially encourages agency heads after their new political positions are approved to immediately petition something called the Federal Labor Relations Authority, which determines whether positions can be in a bargaining unit, in other words, be part of the union, to immediately petition them seeking clarification or classification whether they should properly remain in the bargaining unit, which is code words for they're out of the union,
right,
to the extent they had a union contract.
Now, you guys, I guess, have joined the suit brought by the National Treasury Employees Union and, I guess, House Democrats as well, right?
Well, we have not joined that suit yet.
Okay.
We are reviewing various aspects of it. We are focusing right now on the election because I think, you know, maybe in a week from now, under normal circumstances, might be a little longer, right, given the circumstances we're facing, this problem could effectively be over. While it's true that Trump could spend the next, you know, 2.5 months from the election doing a fair amount of damage, there's nothing President Biden and his team could not undo. There might be some people upset, but he could, under this executive order, simply reverse everything. He could fire all the people who might be hired as, you know, these political hacks, and he could then restore, or there's something called corrective actions, where he could restore anybody who was displaced or harmed by the EO. So right now, I think we're looking more at the political end of a fix. You know, one of the concerns, and I'm speaking now for myself mostly, that I have with suits at this point, especially at such a critical juncture where we're looking at, you know, possibly, you know, a change in administration momentarily, is putting things into this judiciary. That's not without some degree of risk.
No, so, good point.
Which, you know, you never know what could happen if these cases get before a Trump-friendly court or Trump-friendly judges. I mean, as you pointed out, we've seen some pretty. So I was telling one of my colleagues, things that 10 years ago we would have, you know, considered unthinkable are now, you know, coming out as fairly standard decisions.
And that's what happens when you have ideologues on the court and not people who I look at some of the appointees that they've put into place. You know, the one guy who never actually stepped foot into a courtroom, he's a judge.
Well, as I was telling a colleague just earlier today, we have a case pending for an appellate court where we're supporting a position taken by Scalia 30 years ago.
Wow.
And we think it's going to possibly go down. So, you know, that's how much things have changed in the last few years in the judiciary. So I am cautious before taking cases before what I consider to be stacked courts.
That's an excellent point. And, you know, on the executive order front, because, you know, I'm thinking about Joe Biden. Hopefully people get out and vote. And at this point, if you haven't voted, don't put anything in a mailbox. Take it right to the election office, drop it off, or take it and surrender it and vote in person on Tuesday. Do not put it in the mailbox, people. But let's say Biden wins. Is there a possibility of one giant executive order? We go, we're just going to undo everything that Trump did by executive order. Is that possible?
Well, I don't think that really be possible. It'd be one massive executive order. I can assure you that people are collecting lists of EOs that need to be overturned. I know we have a small collection at AFGE right now. Of EOs that we want overturned, including some disastrous EOs issued in mid-2018 that, you know, were designed to go after federal employees and after the unions, which, you know, we'd like to see overturned on the first day if possible.
Right.
I'm sure there are many, many groups that have their own little, you know, list of EOs. It's usually cleaner. I don't want to get into the whole practice of how to, you know, overturn an EO, but it's usually cleaner to take each EO one at a time and repeal it.
Yeah, but I mean, there's just been so many. Because remember, this was Donald Trump was the guy, and a lot of these people who support him were the people who were, every time Obama would sign an executive order, were losing their ever-loving freaking minds. And this guy's done nothing but executive orders. And I would argue destructive ones. You know, you could argue that Obama was trying to make things a little bit better. This guy's trying to tear things down, and taking rights away from working people it seems to be front and center. So last line of questioning I've got for you, because, you know, I want my union audience to understand that this guy's not their friend. And these executive orders have been harmful to working people, because you mentioned the three that came out a couple of years ago that hopefully will be overturned, you know, that takes away representation and takes away, you know, seniority rights on a certain level. If you could explain those real quick, I'd appreciate it.
Well, I mean, he just finalized the rule on at least one of them about a month ago. Well, the three orders collectively basically just kicked the unions out. They literally kicked them off the premises to the extent we had small offices. They're kicked out. They restrict the use of something called official time, which is a concept that may be unique in the federal sector. But we have open shops. But yet we have an obligation under the statute to represent everyone who's in the bargaining unit. So in return for representing everyone, even if they're not paying dues, we get something called official time. And official time means representation of employees on particular matters. It does not involve doing union business. Well, the Trump administration has basically said, sorry, we're basically taking away not all your official time, but like 90 or 95% of it. Oh, and by the way, don't forget, if you don't represent everybody in the bargaining unit, we'll seek to have you, you know, decertified. So, you know, they put us in an impossible situation. And they kicked us out of the physically kicked us out, cut off access to phone lines, told shop stewards that they had to seek permission from their bosses before they could engage in any representation of their colleagues. It was just terrible. It is just terrible. And then with respect to discipline and removal of federal employees, they did away with about 40 years of labor law. You no longer have to use progressive discipline. You no longer have to make sure that the penalties are roughly comparable for the same type of offenses. This was not directly affected by the executive orders, but at least at the Department of Veterans Affairs, they lowered the evidentiary standards that are applicable to discipline. Oh, and they said, by the way, no court or administrative agency can lessen the penalty selected by the agency. So let's say you're caught taking, you know, a box of pencils home, and the agency proposes, and they can prove that you did it, and the agency proposes removal. Well, the reviewing authorities have no right under at least under their theories to lessen the penalty. So those EOs and the associated anti-union, anti-labor, sort of just anti-employee ideas are just, you know, percolating constantly throughout all the things that we see come out of the administration. And, you know, and it's, you know, I'm only speaking on the federal employee end.
Right.
I mean, right now, you mentioned Secretary Scalia at the Department of Labor. You know, they're proposing now basically making the rules on who's an independent contractor as opposed to an employee much easier to classify employees as independent contractors. And I think, you know, hopefully you and your audience know that's not a good deal for working people in any way.
No, and that's why I think people need to hear that and need to understand that this administration has not been their friend. And this Supreme Court, most certainly not going to be their friend. And as I've explained here on the air, I fear we're heading right back to the heart of the Lochner era, only we're going to call it the 80s.
Yes, we are. I couldn't agree. Yeah, I mean, I never thought I'd hear that in my lifetime, but.
But
I'm afraid you may be sadly right.
Well, I fear I might be. But Richard, I appreciate the time. I hope you'll come back again and share some more with us. Hopefully this all goes away and we move on in
a
better place.
I hope we tell happy stories next time.
There you go. Richard, I appreciate the time, man. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
Richard Loeb, Senior Policy Counsel there for the American Federation of Government Employees, AFGE. Like I've been telling you, look, this administration has been horrible for working people, terrible for unions, and for all my union brothers and sisters who think that Trump is on their side, he's not at all. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You listen to the Rick Smith Show.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.